Oh my god, all of the aliens have landed here in New York and we have to go fight them.
Okay.
Everyone, follow me. I'm Iron Man. Hawkeye, let's go. Here, you and me will get to the battle first.
Just us? Nobody else can join
yeah,
us?
Yeah, just you and me. Everyone will follow our lead. Let's go. Let's kill them all.
I'm sorry. I'm a little concerned because you have all this protective gear.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't have armor.
No. Only I have the suit. And then that other guy that I gave the suit to.
Well.
And then in the later movie, Infinity War, I give Spider-Man a suit because he needs it because he's going to space. But I don't have a spare suit right now to give you. I mean, you're fine. You're Hawkeye. You have great aim with a bow and arrow.
No, I know. And I'm Hawkeye and usually I don't wear anything, but this looks dangerous.
No.
Just give me one suit.
You're going to...
You have extra suits, hey, don't you? Lend me one.
I wouldn't lead you into a battle with thousands of aliens with unknown capabilities and have them kill you. You'll be fine.
I don't know. I'm scared.
Jump and run and hide behind a car.
What if they blow up the car and I get the ricochet kills me?
I doubt they're going to blow up any cars.
What?
Let's just get out of here. I'll have a suit and I'll make you a suit next time.
Okay, so you owe me a suit?
Yeah. No, I owe you a suit. Let's go.
Okay, that's fair. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Bad science. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today I am thrilled beyond belief to be talking about the Avengers 2012 $1.5 billion profiting Avengers. You've all probably seen it. Anyways, my guest today, I can introduce at the same time, which might be a first. We have Daniel and Jorge from Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe. How's it going, guys?
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. I'm absolutely delighted, and I feel like I got to take apart here each of your intros because you are both scientists, right? I mean, you're both doctors. You both have doctorates. Is that correct?
That's right. Please take off your pants.
And cough. I'm going to have an exam on the podcast today. Yeah. Okay, so let's start with Daniel. Dr. Daniel Whiteson, you are a particle physicist at CERN. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called CERN.
It's called CERN, right, uh-huh. Of course. I knew that, and I was testing you. And you
I like CERN, though. That sounds better.
Thank
you.
It's like you get down a kernel of truth.
Yeah, you get down to the nugget of the universe, right?
Actually, maybe the Swiss do pronounce it CERN, because it's in Switzerland.
No, it's in Switzerland, but they speak French, so they pronounce it CERN.
CERN.
Yeah, very
So that's the proper pronunciation. Okay, cool.
We don't have a doctorate in languages, by the way.
I do not have a PhD in bad French accents, though.
Oh,
I'm working on it.
I would love to study that. I we're in America, so it's like I'm going to pronounce it Kern. You know what I mean? That sounds like a good American company, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I work at Kern. Yeah.
So I work at CERN. I'm a professor down at UC Irvine, but my research is at CERN because they have the Large Hadron Collider there, where we smash protons together at almost the speed of light and try to make new kinds of matter and figure out what is the kernel of the universe and all that kind of stuff.
Sweet. That sounds really fun and complicated, and I already have a lot of questions about that. But before we dive into it, I want to talk about Jorge here, Jorge Cham, Dr. Jorge Cham, I should say, respectively. You are the creator of PhD Comics. So you're a cartoonist and you have a PhD in robotics. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. I have a PhD in robots, making robots, which is technically engineering. Although I did get into a lot of
science. So are you admitting that engineering is not science?
I think I'm admitting that science is not engineering.
Ooh, turn it on you. All right.
I'll agree with that.
So that's fascinating. How did that come about? Were you doing these things at the same time? Were you interested in cartooning afterwards? Most people, I feel like you have one specialty, and it seems like these are both two really different specialties that you're attacking.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird and funny story. But so I was getting my PhD in robotics and engineering at Stanford. And while I was doing that, I just thought it'd be fun to start a comic strip kind of about the whole experience of joining academia and being a young researcher.
Did you have previous expertise in drawing cartoons?
You would think that would be a requirement, but it was a student paper, so the bar was a little low.
Okay.
But I always kind of doodled all my life. Oh. And I always been a fan of comics and comic strips, and so I just thought it'd be fun to do it on the side, and it just kind of took off after years. Of doing it, and eventually I decided it was, you know, a little bit more popular than my robotics research. And so it seemed it made sense to switch careers.
Wow, crazy. Okay. And we were just talking before the pod that you've now somehow made it into films. You've made two films based on these comics. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the comics, they're called PhD Comics. They have kind of a following online. And at some point, just kind of the opportunity came up to make films based on the comics and the characters.
Animated
the
films?
No, they're live action.
Live action films?
Yeah. So we filmed them.
Superhero movies, right?
Yeah. Nobody has superpowers. No special effects, but no, they're pretty cool. They're filmed at Caltech here in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And they feature like real grad students who kind of had a passion for acting and directing and things like that. And so we made movies based on the comics.
Great. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Where can people see these films?
Yeah.
How can we see these
in
films?
My basement. If you come over.
Okay, that doesn't sound weird. Yeah, I'm in.
No, I'm just kidding. You can find them at phdmovie.com, so you can stream both of them there.
phdmovie.com.
Yeah, they're comedies. They're great. Fun. They're emotional also, and they're a good show.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that sounds great. I can't wait to watch those. And leads us right into The Avengers.
Yeah.
Which I will admit to you guys, because we briefly spoke on the phone, and it seemed like there was some tension because I don't know about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as I've now learned that it's called. I had not seen The Avengers before. We're talking, of course, about, again, 2012, the first Avengers, because when I have told my friends about The Avengers, the instant question is like, the latest Avengers? Which Avengers? What are you talking about? And I was like, no, it's just called The Avengers. What are you talking about?
I don't understand. How do you host a podcast about science fiction movies and not see The Avengers?
Like, I know.
Is it technically
science fiction, or is it more like fantasy?
I get a lot of crap for way worse atrocities than The Avengers. Trust me. I am not...
this is not your gravest offense. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't seen The Godfather or The Matrix or Lord of the Rings. Or...
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what gravity is at all. I'm just here trying to figure it out with you guys.
Have you actually seen any movies? Or you just sort of...
No, I've only seen Men in Black and Mrs. Doubtfire, unfortunately.
Well, you're all set there, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I just read the Wikipedia plot summaries and go from there.
Yeah, it's like Spark Notes when I was in school. Let's put my thoughts to the side for a second. I want to know your takes. Did you see it in theaters? Are you a big fan of this film?
Yeah, well, I have a long relationship with the Marvel Universe. So I grew up in Panama, which is a very small country in Central America. And so, like, for us, American culture was, like, so interesting and incredible, and we just wanted to consume as much of it as possible. So there was this one chain of stores in Panama that would bring comic books from the U.S.
Okay.
And so as a kid, I really just grew up reading and devouring these comics. And especially just the Marvel Universe, just kind of, like, how colorful and how... real and kind of, I mean, not real, obviously, but, you know, kind of very, very sort of emotionally based stories that I sort of grew up with. And so, yeah, I was very excited when, like, Iron Man came out and it was actually really good.
Yeah.
And I think that surprised most of the universe, really. And then just the way they've been building up to these Avengers movies, I think, to me, has been it's a feat of, like, production and filmmaking and, like, storytelling. It, to me, has been... pretty impressive.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of all of these movies, and I think I want to touch on the sort of category question that was raised earlier, like, is this science fiction or is it fantasy? And for me, it's definitely science fiction, which is why I like it, because no matter what happens in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're always suggesting that there's an explanation. Like, if you dug deep enough, or maybe they'll make a movie about it one day, but, like, there's a science explanation for why this happens, or dark energy this, or whatever that.
Yeah.
It's never just, like, you know, write it off as supernatural or magic. There's always supposed to be an explanation. To me, that's scientific, right?
Yes.
There's an answer to every question. You might not know it right now, but it is answerable. And so to me, they're definitely science fiction, and that's one reason I love them. And it's definitely clear that they spent some of their gazillion-dollar budget on science advisors, right?
Yes.
They didn't just, like, Google random science phrases, which is a huge step up from a lot of movies. So kudos to them.
Yeah.
They definitely tried to get this right.
Although I would sort of argue that maybe Iron Man is not really science fiction. It's more like engineering fiction.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a new genre of film.
Yeah, I think it's ready to take off, you know.
Engineering fiction.
It's just kind of like it's kind of about him kind of putting this stuff together and making it work and testing it and trying it. And,
yes.
And yeah, it's about the mechanics. Not so much as like new science or science concept, but just kind of like it's a machine. And that's kind of, I think, what made it interesting.
Yeah, totally.
I think Iron Man is awesome also because his superpower sort of is science. He's mm-hmm. like, you have a problem? I can science it.
Right.
He can engineer it, you mean?
Yeah, I can, come up with an arc reactor, which I think is science, and, come up with a strategy to defeat this problem or invent some new kind of suit or something. Like, mm-hmm. he personally doesn't have, a physical superpower.
Mm. Yes.
He just, applies the rules of the universe around him to solve the problem, and I thought that was pretty awesome.
He's just smart.
He's just really smart.
The other awesome thing about him is he's one of the few, positive portrayals of a scientist or engineer in the movies.
Hold on. I agree with you, but what is this undertone debate happening between engineering and science? Why is
it? Danny has a long simmering resentment of pop culture.
Appreciation for engineers.
He feels scientists are sort of like an
Well, hold on, because I would, in my head at least, I feel like science is this huge umbrella, and then engineering would be a subset of science. Am I wrong on that? Are there two different umbrellas, science and engineering?
You're sort of splitting hairs, a little bit. I mean,
well,
I think
I'm not popular culture. You guys seem to be obsessed with one of us is
We're
right.
We're splitting hairs here.
I would say science is a circus tent and engineering is a tiny little parasol. No, I'm joking. They live harmoniously.
I would agree scientists are sort of
other.
Clowns. Right into second.
Got so much work.
Usually I'm wearing a white lab coat right now and planning to take over the world. But the point I was making was that usually scientists who have great power, they're always driven by hubris and their desire to control everything. And they don't care about what happens to humanity.
Yes.
It's always a negative portrayal because these folks can't balance these things. But Tony Stark, not only does he achieve awesome stuff, he tries to benefit humanity. He builds arc reactors to help save the planet. And in a lot of these movies, I'm sure you know that he struggles with, or they struggle with, what do you do when one man has so much power or whatever? Mm-hmm. Really interesting issues. But they're assuming he's benevolent at least, which is a big step up, because I watch a lot of science fiction and see a lot of folks in lab coats planning to take over the world, and that frankly just doesn't happen. None of my colleagues are planning to take over the world.
Yeah And I also enjoy just the different and much cooler portrayal of scientists. Tony Stark is just a really cool, funny dude, and in Black Panther, I can't remember her name, but she was sister of the king, was also just really funny and cool and a super scientist,
cooler than in real life for sure.
I don't know if it's a point of discussion even, but you were talking about the consultation for the movie, and I read that the Science and Entertainment Exchange provides science consultation, so I don't know if you guys vouch for them, or because usually I'll do some research and it's a person or a physicist or whatever that consults, but I guess there's a whole, I don't know, company or program, team of scientists. Did you guys know about this?
I'm a member of that exchange, but I'm still waiting to hear from the Marvel Universe people.
Whoa.
Are you really?
Well, listen, now that you've done this podcast, I assume you'll get a call tomorrow.
My phone is blowing up right now. You haven't even published this podcast yet.
We're not done with it. guys, come on. Dr. Daniel. What are you guys doing? He's great, clearly, and loves Marvel. So what in the hell?
Absolutely. I mean, he says he loves Marvel now, but I know for a fact that he's a DC guy.
Oh, I
can love more than one thing in the world.
Love is endless.
You like oatmeal and bananas, right? I like science and engineering.
Although some comments from before, I don't know. So listen, we've established that we all love the film. We all praise the film. That's great. Mm-hmm. I have one or two, I guess I can split it into two, issues with this movie.
Yeah,
I want to know.
Let's break it down.
I want to know if you guys feel the same, because it bothered me several times. And again, this is coming from somebody who does not know about this stuff. Okay, so I'm sure there's great reasons for it in the comic books, etc. Here's my main issue. Mm-hmm. Hawkeye, uses a bow and arrow. Also, doesn't have any superpowers like Tony Stark, but. As you mentioned, Tony Stark has this crazy suit. He's super smart, etc. Hawkeye has a bow and arrow and no armor.
He's practiced
what,
a
what
lot.
What is he doing
though?
There?
Like a lot.
Why is he there? And then I feel the same way for Black Widow, who is standing there with pistols, shooting at an alien race, and all these guys get knocked
just
around.
Just another pretty face, as they say, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes. But I don't. I just. could not get over it. I was trying to just like go with it and ignore it. And, you know, like Nick Fury's character, obviously not a superhero, but he's like in charge of this whole, I don't know what it is, council or whatever. So I just thought like, okay, why aren't they like just part of that team? Like, why don't they just work on strategy and organizing? But they're not. They're out in the field as if they are a Hulk.
And so can Nick Fury, right? He like jumps out of a helicopter that's crashing in this movie and like comes up shooting.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But that's because it was like emergency situation at the beginning. He was trying to
stop somebody. Everybody in the whole organization is capable of like high-end martial arts at any moment.
Okay,
I hear that. Must be part of the training. I don't know.
But these people have like super health to them. Like Thor gets knocked around. If Tony Stark gets knocked around, he has the suit. And they get back up and it's no big deal. If you knock over Hawkeye or Black Widow into a cement block or into a car, you're dead. They're dead on the spot.
Yeah. Right, right. It's always convenient how in big fights, they escape some of the bigger
blows
the bigger guys get.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I know why. I agree it's totally awkward.
Okay.
And I think the reason it happens is that they originally are totally different characters from different sort of mini universes, right, with their own origins. And then when you bring them together into a story, it doesn't make sense if one of them is like all powerful and the other one's totally dinky. So I think they're trying to bring them up into this sort of the same level so they can play in the same field. But it's a little awkward. It's like Batman versus Superman. Like,
Batman can never win.
Right.
I never understood that.
And in this
Superman
movie,
can just blow and kill Batman, right?
Yeah, he has like laser eyes.
Yeah.
Does he not?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
There's no versus. Moment,
right? Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And so, like,
it should be called Superman puts up with Batman. Or something, you know, like Superman takes pity on Batman.
Yeah. Superman entertains Batman and, like, for a while. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And in this movie, like even Iron Man versus Thor, like, okay, this is Thor, man. Like, Iron Man is wearing a suit of iron. Like, Thor can't punch through iron. Thor's hammer doesn't like destroy iron. I don't really understand.
Yeah.
Maybe Captain America's shield is made of vibranium. But yeah, I think it's pretty implausible.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Captain America was another one. I at least, because again, I don't know the origins and stuff, but they did mention that he was like made in a lab and then frozen. So in my head, I was like, oh, he must have some sort of superhuman capabilities for healing or for I don't know what. So it's like kind of makes sense to me.
He is super soldier, super serum, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Right. They injected him with it.
Well, it inject Black Widow and Hawkeye with it too then, damn it. They're just, I don't know. So that for me was like the one of the only issues I really could not get over in the film.
Well, I feel like I should stand up for some of the big comic book geeks out there.
Please.
So in the comics, Hawkeye does sort of have a superpower.
Okay.
So he's just like really good at at aiming things.
He practices a lot, right?
No, like at least in the more recent reboots of the comics, he can throw anything and be lethal with it. Like,
oh,
he'll take a paperclip and he can like
whoa,
shoot it
I would
straight
have loved
into your
to see
eyes
that, by
something.
The way. That sounds great.
Yeah, it
but
sounds
where does
cool.
that come from? Is he like genetically different, or is he practiced a lot, or is it given to him by some watery tart, you know, pulling a sword from a lake?
I think we're still waiting for the Hawkeye movie, you know?
Oh, I see. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Somehow he's an elite agent, yeah.
But that's the thing I mean about these being science movies. Like, in theory, there is a story there, right? And if they do a Hawkeye movie, they'll elucidate it and explain all this stuff, right? They won't just be like, magic.
Right.
We would hope so.
Yeah.
Because
it'd be a short movie. Yeah.
But I think the movie sort of weaves it in pretty well in that they, you know, they, in the plot, Black Widow and Hawkeye are agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
You know, they're like, you know, agents that are already there and they're sort of the handlers for these kind of big superpowered dudes and beings. So that's sort of how they weave them in, I think.
Okay. I don't know. It would have been a lot more realistic and a lot
if everyone had superpowers.
Or, yeah, a lot. If everyone has superpowers, or they get killed. You know, like an alien comes and just knocks them in the face and they're dead now.
Or like Thor just accidentally moves his arm and like decapitates.
Well, you shouldn't have been hanging out with Thor so much in the battlefield. but leaving that aside, obviously, I kind of get what you were saying, Daniel, is like they're just trying to like combine all these characters into one big epic movie. So, of course, it's going to be a little bit uneven, wonky, which I get. I just had to say it because there were some scenes that it just looks so, you know, they're all fighting and she's just firing pistols into the air. I was like, what is happening right now?
I gotta agree. And I think that's the weakest part of the movie. The part that I don't really enjoy is like watching invincible guys punch each other for 10 minutes. Like,
right.
You know, nobody's gonna die. Yeah. What happens in any particular moment, this punch, that punch, doesn't make any difference.
Right, right.
So you're just really watching punching.
Yeah. I didn't even get really why. Like, I thought it was strange how, Thor comes up to the airplane, takes Loki, and then Iron Man Man is just pissed that he stole him, even though he knows, like, oh, Thor is, like, a good guy. He's for our cause. He's a protector of Earth, etc. But he still goes and picks a fight with him, and they start, like, you know, almost to the point of shattering Iron Man's suit, you know, instead of just talking it out. Or so, right. I thought
why
that was
can't
a little,
we just talk it out, guys?
Yeah, be diplomatic here. Yeah. You're both on the same
side.
Whoa.
Let's all have do a trust exercise first.
Yeah, trust
I
fall.
Like that, though. I thought that was realistic. Like, you know, Iron Man is kind of a self-centered jerk, right? And
that's
that might
true,
be
yeah.
how the way he behaves. He likes to be the most important one. And so
yeah.
I think they did a great job of really developing characters. And as Jorge was saying, like, having honest emotional arcs to these people, that makes the movie interesting, how they disagree about how to handle situations.
Right, that's true. Okay, here's another real stupid one before we get into, like, awesome science stuff, which I do want to dive into, and I promise that we will. And I think this is, like, the age-old question, Hulk's pants.
Right.
Hulk's pants.
Yeah, are they stretchy, or what are they made out of?
Right? Yeah.
They must be made out of dark energy, like everything else in the movie, right?
Right. Well, for me, this really touches on something that I've always wondered as a kid, even about the Hulk, just in terms of the science, right? Uh-huh. Like you know, he's a regular guy, weighs, like, you know, 160, 180 or whatever.
Sure.
And then suddenly he transforms into this huge hulking, you know, 3-ton being. Where does that mass come from? You know,
oh.
like, that's a science question there.
Okay.
Like, does the mass used to appear out of
gamma
nowhere?
Gamma rays.
Yeah, but what do you mean? Like, he's storing the gamma rays, or what do you think, Daniel? How would you explain
that work?
The science?
That's a great question, right? And you know, they lean on gamma rays pretty heavily in Marvel, and I think that's cool. And remember, Hulk's origin story is he was irradiated by gamma rays in the lab. I think actually trying to recreate Captain America's super serum, right?
Oh, okay.
Or something like that.
Yes, yeah. They did say that. That's
yeah.
right.
So gamma rays, like, transformed his DNA somehow, and that's true, right? Gamma rays are just high energy photons. They can penetrate your body. They can totally clobber your DNA. They will give you cancer.
Whoa.
They probably will not turn you into the Hulk, but they are, you know, dangerous.
Would they turn you green, though?
They might turn you green, yeah. We can
okay.
do some experiments
color, at least.
Later if you like to try it. So they are dangerous, and they certainly can cause mutations. How does Banner gain mass and turn into the Hulk? Yeah, that's a good question. Especially because, well, we definitely know he's gaining volume, right?
Yes.
Do we know he's gaining mass? Is he, like, puffier, maybe just, like, less dense.
Maybe
he's like
just like
a
giant
cloud of
ball. Yeah, like
he doesn't look
he,
like
he
it.
Could just blow and he because he yeah he would be saying his density goes down but his volume increases. That's you're saying that hasn't been properly established.
Yeah, I think you know, we should think about that option. No, I think that's pretty unlikely because he definitely seems like a heavy dude. So you're right, but you know, if you wanted to come up with a plausible scientific explanation, you can always lean on energy, right? Because we know that energy and mass are equivalent. You can create mass out of energy. Okay. We do that in the Large Hadron Collider all the time. We smash particles together at very, very high speeds, turn them into heavier stuff. So you can gather energy and turn it into mass, but it takes a huge amount of energy. Like, the amount of energy you would need to create, like, a raisin is about as much energy as in a nuclear bomb.
Whoa.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
Out of nothing.
Out of nothing. Yeah, just the energy stored in that mass.
Because, you know, sometimes you see magicians, like, come up with a coin out of thin air. Does that mean that they're...
Yeah, that's real magic. There's no scientific explanation.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Not gamma rays or anything?
So one raisin, if he was to come up with a raisin out of thin air, it would take the energy of a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I mean, so
the Hulk
he's going
is a
for
lot
the
of
Hulk.
Raisins.
A lot of raisins, yeah.
A lot of bombs.
So that's going to be a lot of gamma rays. I don't know where he's getting them. Maybe he's got some secret source of them. But yeah, that's going to be a tricky question for the science advisor of the next Hulk movie, which maybe I hope will be me. Call me up.
Yeah, probably. That's great. We're speaking.
You're like,
with...
I have an answer, but I won't tell it on air. You have to call me.
Yeah.
Pay me a consulting fee.
I have to ask the director if it's
cool. I'll work for free.
Oh, just to do it. That's really nice. So wait, where can we find gamma rays? How does that, where is that a naturally occurring thing? Is that something you have to produce in the lab? How does that work?
Yeah, so gamma rays are just photons, right? Photons, we give lots of different names depending on how much energy they have.
Okay.
So if they're really low energy, a really long wavelength, we call them radio waves, and then more energy, we call them visible light, more energy, we call them X-rays, and then the really high energy ones, we call gamma rays.
Ah.
They're all just photons,
okay.
right? And you can find them out in space. Gamma rays are produced by the sun. Sometimes sometimes we get huge bursts of gamma rays when like stars go supernova or black holes collide or big cosmic events.
Okay.
Most of the time we're protected by our atmosphere. Like our atmosphere is like a really good protection from gamma rays. Mm. And but sometimes some of them leak down and do hit you. They're also produced by radiation, you know, so when like atoms split and stuff like that, or you detonate a nuclear bomb or you do experiments with radiation. So that part is totally legit. Like you do experiments with radiation, you're going to risk gamma rays.
Wow.
You need protection. So, and they are dangerous.
But really, it's just light, right? Basically, yeah. It's just a light of a really high frequency.
Okay. And are we now at more risk because of what we're doing environmentally, the ozone layer? Are we getting more gamma rays? Are we in trouble there?
We were in trouble because the ozone layer was disappearing, remember, in the 90s.
Yes.
But then they figured that out. Actually, a guy down at UC Irvine figured that out.
Ooh, shout out.
And then, you know, the chlorofluorocarbonzo? I don't remember.
Oh, man.
Carbonzo.
Just lean into it. Just lean into it.
That's how they say
it
in Panama, right?
Hexaprofilochlorofluorocarbons. type that into Google. You'll find the right answer.
Okay. So
we're depleting the ozone layer. And that was making us sensitive to gamma rays. And so, yeah, we were losing our protection. But, you know, they figured out the aerosol cans were eating that and making the hole in the ozone layer. And they outlawed those. And now our ozone layer is nice and healthy. So we should be pretty well protected from gamma rays.
Okay. That's good to know.
Unless you're doing experiments in your basement to try to turn into the Hulk, in which case, you know, be careful.
Right.
In which case, eat a lot of raisins.
Yeah.
Or wear lead padding, especially, you know, lead underwear. Would be good. That's my recommendation.
But then you get bigger and they break. That's the original question.
Yes, that's right. Yes. There's no way, unless it's like, yes, super stretchy material. I don't know.
Yeah.
Your dong's going to just come out and everyone's going to see it. Your big, hulky, green gamma dong.
Well, remember, Bruce Banner has 7 PhDs, so maybe one of them is in like, you know, engineering of clothing.
Textile.
Or something. Textile engineering. There you go.
Textile, maybe. Yeah, maybe he designed his own pants, knowing that sometimes that happens.
I would love that explanation in there. That's all I'm saying.
You got a lot of PhDs to work with there, so. I love how they measure your intelligence by the number of your PhDs, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Albert Einstein, only one PhD, dude, sorry.
Yeah, kind of a schmuck.
Impressive. Are you sure? Really? You didn't get any honorary PhDs?
Honorary PhDs do not count. Seriously. Somebody tries to impress you with their honorary PhDs, then...
Damn, because I was really hoping to get one at some point and then tell people to call me
that's
doctor.
That's kind of snobby there of you. You're saying an earned PhD is more valuable than one day.
Honorable?
I think earned means more than unearned, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, going out on a limb here.
That's a pretty crisp delineation, yeah.
Okay. You heard it here first, folks. Okay.
Also, you can lose your unearned PhDs. If you're like an impressive public figure and people want you to come and give a commencement speech and they give you a honorary doctor from Princeton, and then later you're embarrassing, they'll totally just take it away.
Damn.
And you don't think that can happen in a regular PhD?
It's much harder.
But it's still possible.
It's possible to get stripped of your PhD, but then you have to like have shown that you had committed fraud or made up data or something like that.
What if you go on a podcast and come up with a name for like the
chloro.
Yeah, can you get stripped?
Yeah, I think I just lost my PhD in chemistry. Yeah.
Your honorary PhD. Yeah.
I'm down to just one PhD now.
Oof, what an idiot. Guy's a bozo. Okay, the Tesseract. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
This is like some sort of unlimited clean energy source that they have in the Marvel universe, I guess.
Yeah.
So is there theories on that? Do we have anything that's similar to that? I don't know. It seems to have like unlimited power, which I don't know if that even exists or makes any sense.
It does. I think in the movie, I think the Tesseract started in like the first Captain America movie.
Okay.
So there's 20 of these movies and, you know, they really sort of weave all the trivia throughout. So they started in the Captain America movie and then later in the stories, I don't know if they retconned this or they had it all planned from the beginning, but the Tesseract turns out to be one of the Infinity Stones, which is like a big part of the plots later.
Okay.
I feel so nerdy.
No
authority here on my
no. This is good.
Movie.
I need to know.
I don't even know what retcon means. Is that a convention
like
for people who
fix it
it's like
later?
Chloroforo,
Bodenzonzo,
gamma.
Well, in the movie, they describe it as like the energy of empty space, or you know, like yeah, they say it's it comes from dark energy.
Oh, okay.
And you know, that's really
do they
a
really
thing.
in the Avengers movie?
They talk about dark energy a lot, and how the Bifrost is gone, so you need to use dark energy to transform or to transit or whatever you do. This is pretty legit, actually. Whoa. Because dark energy is a real thing. Right, it's we don't really understand what it is, but whatever it is massive. It's most of the energy in the universe is dark energy.
Okay,
it's like 3/4 of the energy in the universe is dark energy, and it's pushing the universe apart. It's like inflating the universe. It's expanding the whole universe.
Wow,
and it's doing that faster and faster. So it's a huge amount of energy. Okay. It's crazy. We don't know what it is, right? So I think that's really cool that they like tap into this like unknown. This like, you know, we struggle with energy problems, but we know so little about the energy of the universe, and so that's totally true. And it is the energy of empty space. The thing is that we don't really it's not a lot. Like a cubic meter of empty space has a tiny amount of energy. Mm. The universe is big, so there's a lot of cubic meters, so it adds up to a lot. Mm-hmm. But there's not that much energy in an empty space. So if you just like took a cube of empty space, you couldn't call that the Tesseract. So I guess somehow they've like managed to understand and control and tap into dark energy and use that as a way to suck up energy. So I mean, that
like
could
maybe,
work.
Like maybe the Tesseract is some sort of a conduit or some kind of like a battery of dark energy. Is that possible?
I mean, since we don't know anything about dark energy other than it exists, sure, right? I mean, it certainly could be. It could be. It's totally plausible that in 50 or 10 or 100 years, we could understand dark energy and then tap into it and use it to do crazy stuff and create batteries.
Put in little cubes that glow.
And make glowing blue
cubes. Have they tried to do stuff like that, like compress empty space? Because, I mean, we have, you know, the International Space Station and such out there. So is there experiments like that?
We're not trying to compress empty space. We're just trying to like understand what is dark energy. Like step zero is like what? You know, we only recently, like in the last 20 years, discovered that it exists. Right.
Okay.
So it's pretty new that we figured this out at all.
How long ago?
It was the discovery. I think was 1999.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Really,
it took a while. It took a while for people to even like wrap their heads around. It's a crazy, mind-shattering discovery. So that's pretty cool that they wove it in. And you know, they took a lot of liberties with it. They're like, okay, it's dark energy. And you can make a wormhole with it, and it powers Loki's weapon.
Right, it's kind of like, yeah.
And it lets him like do mind control and teleport, right?
Yeah.
And all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot.
There was a lot Loki could do with that weapon.
Well, no, I think in the movie, Loki's... I feel so nerdy being the expert here, you guys.
No, stop. Let it go.
I'm not the biggest fan of these movies. I just think they're fun, but I have seen them a lot.
Good. And, that's good.
Yeah, I think... So it turns out the weapon that Loki has, the bad guy in the movie...
The staff.
Yeah, that's a separate thing. That's not related to the Tesseract.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
No, they said it was powered by the Tesseract.
Well, later it turns out that the another one of the Infinity Stones was in that staff.
Oh, okay. So for this particular movie, we know, because, yeah, they said, I think you're right, that they said it is connected somehow, or because then it also like stops the Tesseract from working.
Oh,
I don't know
right.
if they're related in that way, but yeah.
They should have gone back and retconned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See me dropping that new
like
jargon
did.
There.
Apparently they did.
Yeah. And nobody made the Tesseract, right? I didn't miss that. It's something that they just found. Like even the, you know, people from space. I know that's probably
space
not
people,
the right
yeah.
term, but they talk in space, so whatever.
Did you just say it's not called people from space? It's called space people. That's your correction.
I think that's how they prefer to be called.
Okay, my fault. No offense to anybody out there. The space people in this film are after the Tesseract, and so. But they're not the ones who made it either, right? This is just something that, like, is a weird thing that was found somewhere.
It's an Infinity
in the movie,
Stone, right?
Yeah, in the movie, I think you're supposed to just... It's there. Even in the original Captain America movie where they introduced the Tesseract, it's just there.
It's just there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So nobody made the Infinity Stones? They're just part of the universe?
Well, I think in the last Avengers movie, they explained that the Infinity Stones are like the they were just made when the universe was made. So there's like five or six of them, and they were made along with the universe.
Cool. In the Big Bang.
They don't say the Big Bang. They just say like when the universe was created, six stones were created.
Some sort of pre-Big Bang bang.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly, I don't know.
A Bing Bang.
Great. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, I have like a bunch of, since you were talking about the spectrometers, calibrating them for gamma rays, for basic cluster recognition algorithms. There was like, I had to watch it like 3-4 times. I had to keep putting it back and writing down.
It's at 120 million degrees Kelvin, right?
Yeah, exactly. So did that, was that stuff just jargon, or were you watching that like, yes, exactly, that's correct?
I think there was a mix there. Like, if the tesseract emits radiation and high energy gamma rays, then yeah, if you looked for it, you could probably find it. How would you look for it? You'd look for something which could see high energy gamma rays. And what's a spectrometer? It's something which sees photons at various energies. So yeah, spectrometers, you know, can see gamma rays. And if you put them all on the roof and connected them somehow, you could figure out where a big source of gamma rays was.
Okay.
So that, I think, is pretty legit. And you would need a basic clustering algorithm to sort through the data.
Okay. What does that even mean, Daniel? What's a clustering algorithm?
Yeah, well, you know, how would you look for the tesseract if you had data from a bunch of spectrometers, right? Each one is like a little ear, and you'd want to know where is the tesseract, so you'd want to know, well, which spectrometers is it closest to, right? So you get a signal from a bunch of nearby ones that all say, hey, I got a bunch of gamma rays. So what you look for is a bunch of gamma rays, a bunch of spectrometers near each other all setting off, right?
And like
so
that's a cell phone tower type.
Yeah, so that's like a cluster, right? Cool. And so that's what we call a cluster. So you need to find the disparate spectrometers and find the ones that are near each other that are going off. So that's a clustering algorithm.
Wow.
Yeah. Sounds pretty cool.
Do you need a PhD for that, though? Do you?
I wrote a clustering algorithm before I had a PhD, so I guess no.
Marvel consultants, people. You hear that?
But then they, you know, I think that was good. And I feel like they went through a meeting where they were like, can we punch up the science a little bit? Mm-hmm. And they added, you know, like quantum tunneling effects and heavy ion fusion and
what was it called?
Did they really? They just stuck that in there?
Well, there was this moment when Bruce Banner and Tony Stark were supposed to be like sciencing back and forth and impressing each other and having like a little, you know,
science romance.
Like, who has more PhDs kind of thing?
Well, they were like, PhDs. Finally, somebody I can talk to, you know?
That was
anti-electron
the
creators
moment.
And stuff. Yeah, exactly. It was meet cute. And I feel like a lot of that was just, you know, invented jargon, but it wasn't necessary for the plot. They didn't really lean on it. They were just, you could imagine they were just trying to impress each other, right? So in real life, scientists might spout babble all the time, like chloro, fluoro, bloro, whatever carbons, to impress people. So that really happens.
I'm impressed right now from both of you. He mentioned they're trying to break through the Coulomb barrier. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Coulomb barrier.
The Coulomb barrier. Is that a thing?
The Coulomb barrier is pretty hard to crack as well.
That's the porn version of the Avengers. Yeah, breaking the Coulomb barrier.
I'm not gonna touch it.
We're gonna cut this part, right?
Probably not.
No, that's totally real. Like, if you wanted to fuse two things, what does that mean? It means pushing them together enough so they stick together. Mm. But if those things are repelling each other, you gotta, you know, get over that barrier. And so the Coulomb barrier is how things that have charge repel each other. Like, two electrons don't like to be near each other. They're both negatively charged. They repel each other.
Mm. With the Coulomb force, right?
With the Coulomb force.
Uh-huh.
Now, nuclei also have an attractive force. If they get really, really close, they stick together. So you have to get over the Coulomb barrier means, you know, get over this repulsive force and bring them close enough that the attractive force takes over. And that's heavy ion fusion, like, for real. So
that's a real thing.
That was totally real.
We actually do that all the time at the Large Hadron Collider. We don't just collide protons. We smash sometimes lead nuclei and sometimes gold atoms.
Whoa.
Like gold versus gold, like huge atoms against each other.
I assume that there's like really good reasonings for why you're smashing these things together, but do you also just sometimes like, you know what?
Some questions are not polite to ask.
That's not a polite question?
No. I want to smash this together is a really good reason, right?
Like, that's all you need. Hey guys, it's random Wednesday. Let's just throw darts at a board and smash some shit together. Does that happen? You know,
like, yeah, it totally does. Oh, I mean, we don't put bananas in there and stuff like that. You can only accelerate tiny little particles.
Right, sure.
But there is a part of it that's like, let's just see what happens. Nobody's ever done this before.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll rip a hole in the universe. Maybe pink elephants will come out.
Yeah.
There's an excitement there about like doing something nobody's ever done before. And so absolutely that like naive what happens is totally one reason to do this.
Okay.
I feel like you just need to append a little there and you would be totally at home in a movie. Like, let's just rip open a hole in the universe. Let's see what happens.
See what happens, guys. I knew it would happen.
I can't make an evil cackle unless I'm wearing a white lab coat. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I have one in the back. I'll get for you. Okay, so iridium was another thing they said a few times, that it's found in meteorites, etc. Is that a real thing?
Is it a real metal?
Do we have iridium?
Iridium is real. It's a real thing. It really is found in meteorites.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
It's found in meteorites and here, or it's specifically only found in meteorites?
No, it's found in meteorites and in here, but more often in meteorites. Like, we have a different blend of stuff in the Earth than we have, like, in meteorites or on Mars, which is actually cool because you can tell that a rock came from outer space or came from Mars or came from somewhere else because it has a different blend of stuff.
Ooh.
Like, there's rocks on Earth that got knocked off the surface of Mars and landed here on Earth, which I always think is pretty cool.
That is cool.
But, you know, iridium is cool, but I think the coolest thing about it is how it sounds. Like, it doesn't really have that special properties.
I think
it's just fun to say.
Isn't it really important, iridium? Isn't it like a limiting factor in chip manufacturing or something like at some point we might run out of iridium.
Oh.
I think that's nibibium.
Chlorophorium.
Nabloblium.
But did I get that wrong? Is it platinum? There's a metal that we're eventually going to run out of, and it's going to prevent us from making any more like circuits or computers.
Whoa.
No, there are a lot of these, they call them rare earth elements, that don't exist very often on Earth and are really valuable because they're important parts of computer chips. And there's like really toxic mines where like a lot of poor people die every day, like digging this stuff out of the earth so we can have fancy iPhones.
Oh my God.
We should all feel terrible.
Terrible, yeah. Yep.
All right.
Jesus.
Feel terrible? Okay, let's move on.
I'm stuck here. Help. Wait, what are we talking about? What are these minerals or what are these? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember the names of all of them, but some of these elements are pretty rare on Earth, and they are important for electronics. And
why can't we make electronics without these rare Earth minerals?
I think they're really important for batteries, and also just, you know, some of the components of the electronics just work best. But I think that's an engineering problem, so maybe I'll pass that over to
Mike. Is it really?
Apparently. Why can't we make batteries out of normal stuff? Can I ask that question?
I think we can, but you need these metals, is my impression. Is that you need them to... Sorry about that.
No, that's great.
I think you can, but I think my impression is that you need them to make better batteries or really good batteries.
Okay.
Or you know, batteries that don't aren't like the ones in the 70s.
What about those Tesla batteries or like Tesla wall things and cells that they have? Is that using the same rare earth or are they, you know, trying to be, I don't know. In my head, at least, Tesla's like the clean, forward-thinking guys.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think a sad reality is that most batteries are made out of really intense, chemicals, yeah.
Great. Well, that sucks.
But that's an area of like really active research because it's a limiting factor in a lot of things. Like if we had better performing, lighter batteries, we could all have much more efficient electric cars and you could have electric airplanes.
Whoa.
Like the reason we don't have electric jets, like, you know, passenger airplanes is because batteries are really heavy. Mm-hmm. You need a lot of energy to fly across the ocean.
Right.
And so you need a massive battery. It just doesn't work. If we had lighter batteries, that would be good. And battery technology is not really improved that much.
Yeah, so, that's what I was going to say next. It's like, I feel like I'm still using the same batteries I used when I was little. You know, like in my Walkman, I'm still using those same batteries for like my remote control.
You can get new batteries. That is allowed.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I think regular batteries, like the ones you get in supermarkets, haven't changed that much, but battery technology has actually really improved a lot in recent years.
Okay.
To the point where, you know, you can have like batteries made out of plastic, and you know that's kind of why drones have taken off, the little flying helicopters and stuff like that.
Right, right.
Like you couldn't really have that, you know, 20, 30 years ago because you couldn't get that much electricity or power in such a light and small package. But okay. now they can make these amazing batteries that you can have these drones.
Whoa, okay, cool. I also wanted to talk about...
Hey, I suddenly remembered the names of those rare earth metals.
Wow, so strange.
Really? Did Google...
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's so weird because you don't have multiple screens in front of you.
I can see you right here and you just pulled it out of your brain.
Yeah, it's one of my other PhDs that was dormant for a moment. it includes a palladium and platinum and tantalum, neodymium, indium, and this one I can't even pronounce, Yttrium. Ytterbium.
Okay. I read about tantalum recently because we were doing Black Panther, and I think that's one of the, like, they based vibranium on these, like, because there's like these mines, I think in the Congo, where is what kind of what you were saying is like these terrible conditions, but it's like this really rare mineral, and I think tantalum was one of them that they like based the movie on. So that totally makes sense and is totally a bummer, and I hope that if battery researchers are listening to this, that they I don't know, have
come
some coffee.
Come on the show.
We should have fair trade ytterbium or palladium and tantalum
stuff
and pay all those folks a living wage.
Yes.
And then all of our phones would be a lot more expensive.
Yeah, and start of putting people out in space to find more meteorites so that we can have more batteries.
Yes, asteroid harvesting.
More space people. We need more space people.
More space detectives. Why don't we have that? Okay, so I wanted to sidestep from science for a second because I read some really cool stuff about RDJ, Robert Downey Jr., in this movie, who, as we all know, is very funny. And so he, I don't know if you know this as a Super Avengers fan, but he kept food hidden all over that lab set that he was like working with Bruce Banner in, Mark Ruffalo. And so nobody could find where the food was. And so he was just continuously like eating in that scene. And that was not scripted at all. That was just because he was hungry and he wanted like snacks around. So he would just like secretly hide snacks, which I thought was really funny. And then a lot of his like really famous quoted lines from this movie were all improvised stuff. He did that like Galaga line where he's like, that guy's playing Galaga. He didn't think we'd see him, but we did. And then they like shot afterwards the insert shot or whatever of like the guy playing.
Well, that's sort of a question I have about production, and maybe one of you guys knows about this. Like, I see a movie sometimes and I see a line which is really funny, but I think that you couldn't have written that. Nobody's going to sit at a screen and be like, say it and say it this exact way. Like, some kinds of humor, totally you can write. Other kinds, it's like about how people are riffing off each other, or it really depend on the delivery. I wonder how it's possible to write that. And so I wonder, is some of this stuff improvised on set? Are they just like fluid with it and like, hey, go with it and we'll see what we get? Or is it all actually just written and these writers are just amazing?
Well, I think it depends on the filmmaker. I mean, some filmmakers like that and want to capture that, and I think some filmmakers just like stick to the script.
I would agree. I think it differs per director, for writer. You know, I think like Aaron Sorkin, for example, is a guy where he wants exactly what he wrote because he spent so much time and blah 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 whatever. From what I understand, and but when you have somebody like Robert Downey Jr. or there's so many great improvisers, like you want them to just go off and make these jokes because there was a few lines where like, so when Tony Stark at the end like falls back to Earth and he like comes to life because the Hulk like yells at him. So that was Mark Ruffalo improvising as the like in the Hulk CGI
really? Screaming at him?
Screaming at him to wake him up. So that was improvised. And then his reaction was improvised, which was like a huge, like for me at least, it felt like the climax of this whole battle sequence was him, is he going to make it? He does make it. And the line in the script was, what's next? And then that scene was over, which is like fine, but kind of boring. And instead he says like, he wants to try this shawarma place they start talking about, and then like in the post-credit scene they go to the shawarma place and they're eating, which is so good. And so all of that was improvised. It was just him having fun on set, so I just wanted to give a shout out to RDJ for really, for me at least, coming up with some of the best lines in the film.
And I feel like that's the actor sort of taking on the attributes of the character. Like Tony Stark doesn't listen to rules, doesn't follow orders, all this stuff. Do you think that's like Is that who Robert Downey Jr. is, or is he like method acting and he's just like,
I think there's a combo package there. I feel like he was probably cast as Tony Stark because he's kind of that guy. He's kind of this goofball, like, I don't care what I'm supposed to do. Right. I'm doing it my way.
Right. And everything's got to be done with style.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely like in the casting, right? Because, I mean, in the comics originally, Tony Stark is like an alcoholic and he's got issues with all that and rehab and trying to get out of that. And so when they cast Robert Downey Jr., I think that's kind of what they had in mind, was
right.
like this kind of figure who had that troubled past and was sort of playful and kind of egocentric.
Wow. Yeah. Also, I read that since the movie premiered, that shawarma sales in L.A., St. Louis, and Boston reportedly skyrocketed.
Oh, wow. Because
people were very
people
curious.
Like, what's shawarma?
Yeah, all of my heroes are eating shawarma. What's going on?
Maybe Big Shawarma paid Robert Downey Jr. to mention that, right?
Ooh.
A powerful lobby. Shawarma.
That's the sister to Big Pharma.
Yeah. Smaller shawarma. That's really funny. Okay, so, I mean, I feel like we're running low on time here. I don't have my huge clock available for me, but I had some other random questions. I mean, like, I have stupid stuff. I've like, Thor starts bleeding at one point, so I was like, okay, what does that mean? Does he have human qualities? Because he, you know, only bleeds at this one part, which was weird. Right. Then there's the Hulk, how he gets really angry and starts fighting Black Widow in the spaceship. I mean, I don't know. What is it called?
Helicarrier.
Helicarrier, thank you.
Helicarrier.
Yes.
It's a helicarrier.
It is.
It's a hell of a carrier.
Yeah, it is.
And, but then later, he's like able to be the Hulk, but he's also in control. And he knows who his friends are and blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
So I just felt like, oh, is this... I don't know. Was he just so enraged with her? Because she didn't seem to do anything that was that bad to him to make her like... To make him like, I'm going to kill you.
Right. Well, it's interesting that your reactions, they're all sort of about plot. And you know what I mean? Like, you're really interested and invested in, like, does the plot make sense? And... How does this tie into that other thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of my favorite lines in the movie is sort of at the end when he says, like, my secret is that I'm always angry.
I'm always angry,
so
yes.
So it's like you're thinking, like, is he the Hulk when he's out of control? Is it, like, on purpose? Is that really, you know, that?
He's like,
that
was lets it go. I thought that was great, too.
Yeah.
I love that line.
Well, I watched the movie with my wife, who had never seen, I think, any Marvel movies ever.
Oh.
She's a biologist.
Okay. And, makes me feel better.
Yeah. And she had some comments on the science, but mostly it was about, like, bra technology.
Oddly, like, didn't think about that.
Well, because I didn't think about it either, but, you know, like, one of the early scenes where the Black Widow is doing all her fighting and jumping, whatever.
Yeah.
She's wearing kind of a low cut outfit.
Right, right.
My wife was like, I wouldn't be wearing that if I was doing all that activity. You know, like, I don't know.
Well,
how is she staying in
probably
there?
Probably has
she would want a sports bra or
Shield active grade.
Maybe Bruce Banner made a special textile engineering
vibranium.
Dark energy bra.
Dark energy bra.
Yeah, there you go. That's a whole market right there. Somebody jump on that.
I mean, we should jump on that. We'll split it three ways, guys.
I got to get my wife a cut of that. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. No, that's fine. Four ways.
Right.
Cool.
All right. Done.
So then there was this... He drills this guy's eye. Loki, like, drills his eye so that they can breach security. And I thought that was crazy because, like, there's probably so many ways that they can get into this building without doing that, first off. You know, blasting a hole in the wall.
It was awesome, though.
I mean, it was awesome and just really evil. I mean, really, that was the moment for me, at least. I was like, man, there is just no chance this guy has any good in him because in front of all these people, he's, like, with that machine, looks so gross.
And he really seemed like he was savoring it. I'm a big fan of that actor. Was it Tom Hiddleston?
Middleston.
He's great. He really did a great job. I mean, Loki is like ambitious but devious, but sometimes you can almost have affection for him when he's trying to be nice.
Right,
like,
right.
That's a complicated character. I thought he did a great job.
He was definitely smiling at carving this dude's eye out with a machine, which I thought was just so absurd. I don't know. It was much easier for them to get on that helicarrier and instead of this German art place. So I thought that was ridiculous.
Did you wonder about whether a helicarrier could actually, like, get airborne?
Yes. I mean, huge. Wow. I tried to look that up and I could not find.
That seemed implausible to you.
It seems
that's
impossible.
The part of the movie that seemed most impossible.
I would say most impossible. It's on there. This is a long list, but like aircraft carriers weigh a lot.
There was a wide shot where it looked really funny to me because it was like you see all the jets on there and stuff, so you can see like how huge it is, and then the engines start turning and the water starts going, and I'm like, whoa, really? Are you really gonna claim that this thing takes off? And of course, it takes off right then. But I don't think we have anything like that. Do you guys know of anything that can go on the water? I mean, seaplanes, I guess, is like the closest we have, but something that can carry jets?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's aircraft carriers weigh 100,000 tons. Okay. So it's pretty heavy duty stuff.
Yeah.
So you'd need
and
a lot of
propulsion. And that looks even bigger than a normal aircraft.
Well, I mean, they have they have those like cargo carrying helicopters, right? What do they call them?
Oh, that's
the big
true.
Beefy ones. And they carry like
two rotors.
A bunch of tons, right?
They, a bunch of tons. A bunch is not as big as 100,000, but yeah. Like a bunch of bananas.
I mean, it depends on your reference frame.
So when you go and you buy like a bunch of bananas, do they give you like 100,000 bananas sometimes? And they're like,
sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
You never know. Yeah. It's a surprise every time.
I only have a $20 bill, man. Well, here's 100,000 bananas. Okay, so yeah, we're not going to get there probably anytime soon.
What about the shield? Did you get it? You know, the shield?
The stealth part of it or the...
And I mean, like the Captain America's shield is supposed to absorb vibrations.
We touched on it briefly a few weeks ago on that Black Panther because it's made of the same stuff.
Oh, vibranium.
Apparently, vibranium.
Oh, okay. So what did the experts say then?
That we do have like something of similar that like can absorb energy and turn it into kinetic energy, something like that. So that was kind of cool, I thought, and I don't know, somewhat legitimate. But I appreciated how they didn't really harp on it too much in this film. Mm-hmm. They didn't try and explain how the shield works. It's just like, hey, you've either seen the Captain America movies and you're with us or not. And I was like, well, I haven't, but I'm still with you. I'm down.
But when Thor's hammer hits it, right, they're sort of like, they're objects of like equal awesomeness, I guess. And
yes.
So they just got kapang away from each other.
Yeah, but then everybody was fine, though.
Right.
Captain America was fine.
It doesn't really matter how strong your shield is. Like, if you're holding a shield above your head and Thor hits down on the shield, you're going to get squished.
Yeah.
Like, maybe your shield is going to be okay, but you're still going to get squished.
That would have been great if he
I would get squished, but Captain America.
He's got that
serum.
He's got that serum, bro.
He took his vitamins.
Yeah. He can withstand a hit from Thor's hammer without the shield.
You're saying this as if this was a science or something.
What about the ice, like staying alive in ice? Just that in general.
Well, they freeze as cells and they freeze like embryos and
frogs.
Yeah, they come back, right?
Whoa.
Yeah, absolutely.
They freeze frogs?
Yeah, you can freeze a frog and thaw it out and it'll be alive. Yeah.
What?
Only some kinds of frogs and little
some
frogs.
Some kinds of frogs?
Yeah. Because they have the problem when you freeze something is that water is smaller than ice. So you freeze a glass of water, it gets bigger, right?
Right.
So your cells are all basically bags of water. What happens when you freeze them is the ice inside it bursts the cell wall.
Whoa.
Right? So then when you defrost it, it's like mush. But if you have other stuff in there, not just water, then when it freezes, it doesn't burst the cell walls. So some frogs have this stuff inside their cells. I don't remember what it is. It's some kind of glycerin, chlorofluoro something. I don't know the details.
Iridium,
there you go.
Yeah.
That makes it so that it doesn't grow as much when it freezes. So you could imagine.
Whoa.
I think it's totally possible that we could freeze humans and revive them later. I think that's totally something we could do. I don't know about in 10 years or in 50 years, but give us enough time.
We're freezing frogs. That's around the corner, baby. Come on. Also, would you want to be frozen? And when would you be frozen?
I think it's awesome because it's really the only way to travel in time. Like, you could travel forward in time. You could, like, see what happens to humanity in 5,000 years. I mean, there's big risks there and you can't go back, whatever. But it's honest time travel. Like, you could really be out of time. I think that's pretty cool.
Mm. What do you think?
I think my kids would miss me, hopefully.
freeze them too, right?
Don't you sometimes freeze your kids, bro?
Don't you sometimes want to freeze your kids?
Yeah.
I just want to pause them sometimes.
Yes.
Or mute
that's
them.
That's what this is.
Mute
but
them.
Freezing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really interesting, but I don't think I'd want to be frozen. I also just hate being cold. So I feel like
being cold for 5,000 years.
Yeah,
like
I just be in this frozen torment. I would hate it. I don't want that at all.
What if you came out like Captain America?
Oof. I mean, if you're going to pump me with soldier
serum. Like Captain
serum,
America or like, what's his name? Chris Evans.
I mean, honestly, either way, I'm down.
I'll sign up.
That's a win either way.
I mean, if I can act as Captain America, I'm equally down. That sounds great. Okay, well, I guess that's pretty much it. You guys have, obviously, people should check out your podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe.
Yeah, please do. Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe. We have episodes on, like, dark energy and wormholes, all this stuff we've been talking about. What else have we covered in the...
How big is the universe? How did the universe start? What's a space elevator? You know, can you terraform Mars? All sorts of basic questions people ask us. We try to break them down.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
And we only have two PhDs. It's amazing.
Yeah, with only two PhDs, they managed to explain all of this. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I was telling Jorge, I was listening to it on the way here. It's fantastic. I recommend everybody to check it out, especially, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I assume you want to learn some science and have a good time doing it. That's a great way. And I just thank you both for being here and talking about the Avengers with me, schooling me on my non-nerdism that I'm trying to work on. Hopefully, see you soon.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having us on.
Thanks.
Bye. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett, and the executive pepper-ducer is Brett Kushner. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show, send us an email at badscience@seeker.com, and leave us an iTunes review letting us know what you think of the show. And I will see you next week. Bye.